TC.
Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, June 20, 2023. The spokesperson for the UN Refugee Agency says host countries should give refugees solutions that offer the hope of a sustainable future.
If they're given the opportunity to integrate or to be included in their society, then they can become so much more.
And the staff of the International Committee of the Red Cross were caught in a crossfire in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum.
The situation still is very difficult, unfortunately, despite the ceasefire.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A UN-led appeal for funding to help the people of Sudan raised $1.5 billion on Monday as UN Chief Antonio Guterres warned that the country was descending into, quote, debt and destruction at a breakneck speed, addressing donors at a pledging event in Geneva launched by the UN with Egypt, Germany, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and the African Union and the European Union. Guterres said some $3 billion was needed to assist people in Sudan and those who have fled to neighboring countries. The scale and the speed of Sudan's descent into death and destruction is unprecedented, he warned. Without strong international support, Sudan could quickly become a place for lawlessness, radiating insecurity across the region. Today is World Refugee Day, and we have several stories about refugees from Sudan and South Sudan. The theme for this year's World Refugee Day is Hope Away from Home. The focus is on the value of inclusion and refugee solutions as the best method to assist refugees in resuming their lives by enabling them to contribute to the nations hosting them. Lindsay Kunsley is the head of communications at the World Food Programme in Sudan. She tells VOA's Nabil Biagio the pledge comes short of meeting the massive humanitarian needs in Sudan as well as neighboring countries that are taking hundreds of thousands of refugees fleeing the conflict.
For WFP Sudan, we're requiring $409 million for the food assistance response alone. In addition to that, we require $109 million to respond in the neighboring countries. And so again, this is only WFP, so food. If we're looking at other needs, other humanitarian needs, including water, shelter, medical supplies, then the actual overall requirement for the entire humanitarian sector is $2.6 billion. Yes. So this $1.5 billion is still $1 billion short of what would be required.
Now, what needs to be done more to help the Sudanese people caught in this crisis?
Well, first and foremost, the fighting needs to be stopped. There needs to be a long-term ceasefire, and this conflict has to end because this conflict has disrupted what was already a dire humanitarian situation and made it even worse. So now we're looking at a catastrophe on top of what was already a crisis. So first and foremost, the fighting needs to stop. And that means the international community needs to come together and advocate for that, and for each member state of the United Nations to leverage whatever diplomatic and negotiating tools it has for this fighting to stop. That's the first thing. But then for the humanitarian response, immediately we need urgent funding in order to scale up and support all these people whose lives have been completely upended by this conflict, to provide for WFP life-saving assistance, as well as treatment of malnutrition. And then beyond that, we also urgently require the opening up of humanitarian corridors, especially to West Darfur, so that we can reach people who are trapped there and have been stuck in intense fighting now for almost 9 weeks.
Even before the current crisis in Sudan, WFP and other United Nations agencies predicted or forecasted that close to either a third or close to half of Sudan's population is going to be needing food assistance this year. How has this conflict worsened the situation?
So before the onset of the crisis, we had done an analysis on the overall food security situation, basically in quarter one, which showed that around 16 million people, which is actually over one third of the population, was facing acute food insecurity, not having a stable way to access food, afford food. Now, with this conflict, an additional 2.5 million people could further be pushed into hunger, and that would mean that around 40% of the population would not know where their next meal is coming from.
That's Lindsay Kinsley, head of communications at the World Food Programme in Sudan. She spoke with Nabil Biagio from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. At a time of growing hostility toward refugees, nations worldwide are celebrating World Refugee Day to honor the courage and the contributions to society of people forced to flee war, persecution, human rights abuse, and other horrors. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
World Refugee Day shines a light on the plight of more than 35 million refugees and asylum seekers forcibly uprooted from their homes. In marking the day, the United Nations calls for concrete steps to improve conditions for refugees and the communities hosting them, while advocating for solutions that offer the hope of a viable future. The spokesman for the UN Refugee Agency, Matthew Saltmarsh, tells VOA refugees often are portrayed as a drain on society or as passive recipients of humanitarian aid and charity. He says refugees are not looking for handouts. When given the opportunity to work and contribute to a society, he says refugees nearly always jump at the chance.
Refugees are just parked in a settlement or a camp in a very remote area, and they're not given access to livelihoods. They will remain passive recipients of humanitarian handouts. But if they're given the opportunity to integrate or to be included in their society, then they can become so much more and contribute so much more to that society.
The UNHCR reports countries in sub-Saharan Africa host one in five of all refugees globally. 7 million remained displaced on the continent at the end of 2022. Since fighting erupted in Sudan April 15th, the agency reports nearly 500,000 people have crossed borders as refugees and 1.42 million have become internally displaced. The latest UNHCR figures show global forced displacement now stands at a record high of more than 110 million. Saltmarsh says the displacement crisis is putting an enormous strain on aid agencies caring for refugees and internally displaced people. He says refugee operations in Africa are among the most severely underfunded, forcing the UNHCR to cut back on essential programs.
So, for example, last year when there was an outbreak of Ebola, in Uganda, we were unable to source at that time any hygiene and soap and cleaning supplies for the refugees in that country. In the Democratic Republic of the Congo, we've had to cut our women's engagement programs and even some very basic humanitarian assistance, like housing and settlements.
In his message for World Refugee Day, UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi notes millions of refugees are living in limbo because long-term solutions are scarce. He calls on world leaders to live up to their responsibility to broker peace so refugees forced to spend decades in exile can go home. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still on refugee issues, some South Sudanese refugees in Uganda say they are facing several challenges, including food shortages. A senior official at the South Sudan Commission for Refugees says many South Sudanese refugees are voluntarily returning home due to the relative peace in the country. For VOA News, Manyang, David Mayer reports from Juba.
Bongo Bus, a famous commuter vehicle ferrying passengers between South Sudan and Uganda, arrived from Numuli, a South Sudanese town along the border with Uganda. Rebecca Chol is among the passengers who just returned from Numazi refugee settlement in Uganda's Adjumani district. She says life is difficult in most of the camps for refugees in Uganda.
There's no food ration. Recently, some of us were put on a list of people that will not receive food rations. As vulnerable as you can see us, we have been denied food. So we have decided to return home. We have been suffering from hunger.
Achol says she fled the 2016 fighting between the South Sudan People's Defense Forces and former rebels of the SPLAIO. She says she plans to visit Minkaman village and search for more food aid. Moses Nyang Aluel is the chairman for the Refugee Welfare Council at a Germany refugee settlement in Uganda. He says several families have fled the camps after the World Food Program reduced food portions.
They proposed to give to Group 1 7.6 kilograms per person per month. That is for those who are on food. Then those who are on cash will be receiving 28,000 per person per month.
Last year, the UN Refugee Agency, or UNHCR, and other aid groups appealed for $1.2 billion to respond to humanitarian needs of South Sudanese refugees living in East Africa. Nyang says the reduction in food supplies has rendered most refugees vulnerable.
There are cases of high rate of malnutrition and anemia, and accessing services from health centers that are in the refugee setting becomes inadequate, and as a result, it has affected also the community of refugees. There's also an issue of access to education. Generally, there's a challenge of livelihood. You know, refugees are settled in settlements and they don't have access to land.
He says last month alone, three refugees died after committing suicide. VOA could not independently confirm Nyang's account. Yom Panchol returned home from camp in Germany to do casual work in South Sudan's capital. She says she is in Juba to hustle for her family.
I came here in February. Life is hard, as you can see. I decided to come back here to find a way to feed them. The cash that is given to us is not enough to buy food. Now, I buy and sell milk here.
John Dabi, deputy head of the South Sudan Commission for Refugee Affairs, says millions of South Sudanese who sought refuge in the neighboring countries are returning home.
Basically, because we have peace now in South Sudan, and they are returning voluntarily. So you call it actually spontaneous return because it's not organized return.
Dabi says preparations for the repatriation of South Sudanese refugees is going on and it might take time before most of the refugees are transported back to the country. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayer in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Kampala, where a South Sudanese refugee living in the capital city has opened a school for his fellow countrymen. Taidor Koriom says he aims to help young South Sudanese refugees learn about their history. For VOA News, Mungume Davis Rwakarinj has more from Kampala.
The topic for today, we're supposed to discuss growth and development. Now, what happens when a child is given birth to? What is the first thing that you notice? When a child is given birth to? The first thing is that, of course, they are small, right? In size, right? And then they must grow. Yeah? So what brings about growth? No ideas? Now, for you to grow, you must experience something called as cell division, right? And we talked about that. We say that there's something called as what? Mitosis that brings about cell division, right? Now,
a group of South Sudanese students attending a science lesson at Beta City International School in Kabalagala, a Kampala suburb. The school provides advanced or A-level studies, which prepare students for university or other tertiary institutions to serve students. Dozens more have so far graduated and joined higher institutions of learning. 19-year-old Ayok Aben is one of the students of the Beira International School. Aben came to Uganda some 10 years ago when conflict broke out in Juba. Aben says she had almost forgotten much about her homeland until she joined Beira City International School. She adds that she's glad for an opportunity to study and mingle with fellow South Sudanese.
They teach us some of the things we need to know from back home, as well as the things we need to know in our beautiful host country. I'm a shy person naturally, but they've made me come out of my shell in a way that I can't even explain.
20-year-old Deng Marial hails from Lake State. He says he has learned about his country's road to independence and other natural sciences in South Sudan. Marial says he wants to become a doctor.
Once I finish my course, I'll go back to my country. I see where the areas where there's no medicals, like maybe say deep in the village there, we can go as a group. I'm going to give them the medicine to them, like let me say, for example, those pregnant women.
Taidor Koryom, who owns the school, says he started the institution because he wants to provide an opportunity for many South Sudanese living in Kampala.
We're trying to bridge the gap so that at least also they manage to understand what is happening the other side and get to know about their country and also know that at least the country is waiting for all of them.
Koryom says the South Sudanese community in Kampala nicknamed him Ignorance Fighter because of his willingness to help fellow South Sudanese attain an education. He says education could help some young South Sudanese become responsible citizens when they return back home.
For somebody who is very violent, I believe through educating him well, or through telling him that, or getting good information, then they can, it can reduce hating one another easily. Because they will know that as an educated person, you need to be a different than those who anyhow you start fighting. So I believe that this conflict, it can be reduced through education.
Uganda hosts around 1.5 million refugees who are mainly from South Sudan and the Democratic Republic of Congo who live in settlement camps. Few refugees live in urban areas, including the Ugandan capital Kampala, due to the country's refugee policy. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we hear more stories from refugees at Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya. That story is coming to you right after the break. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. VOA heard from residents of the Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya, home to nearly 200,000 refugees from around the region. Monica Yol was born in the camp in 1998 after her parents fled from South Sudan. She grew up in the camp and went to school there. After secondary school, she started to train in media and hopes to use those skills to help others in the camp.
My name is Monica Yom. I'm a South Sudanese by nationality. Born in 1998 here in Kakuma refugee camp in the main hospital. My parents flee South Sudan in 1992 due to the war zone that broke out in South Sudan. And they find themselves here in Kakuma refugee camp where they found peace and healing. And in my childhood time, I used to play with kids, and I attended Gilo Nursery School, whereby we were able to be taught songs and able to meet kids from different nationalities that we played with.
I'm called Farah Mbamplang from Kakuma refugee camp. We can see refugees not written in the body of somebody. It's just a name that have been given to the people who have been displaced. So we know that this is will end and will have end because when we are here, we know we have a future and we will change. So refugees is not something worse indeed, but it's not good also to be displaced from your own original or where you have been born to run away from another country.
So I am by the name Abdulrazak Osman. I'm a Somali refugee. So I came to Kakuma in 2009. So actually, when we were coming to Kakuma, we were having an idea of like, if you go to Kakuma, you'll no longer be there just even for 3 to even 4 years. Our expectation when we were coming from there was very well. We were expecting that we will no longer be as a refugee, going maybe we'll get a resettlement to maybe other European countries. But actually, our expectation didn't come as we were willing, as now we are staying here for almost like 13 years.
Odieng Akwai Oman is my name. I am from Ethiopia. There are unavoidable challenges that the refugees and asylum seekers are facing, and we are the leaders requesting and appealing unions here to improve education sector by employing more teachers, building more classes, and also to make sure that there is inclusive education learning environment.
My name is Noel Ball. I'm South Sudanese. I am 27 years old, and I've lived in Kakuma for about 20 years, since 2000. My life in Kakuma has not been that easy, to be honest. Everything was hard for me because there was resources that were not enough. The number of people who were in the camp were seeking those resources. So we had to scramble for everything, and it was not easy for me. Personally, we had to go through thick things so that we make it out. I started my school when I was still young. I went to nursery school in Takwel. That was in Hong Kong. It's in Hong Kong area. So I went to Takwel Nursery School. In school, it was not bad for me because it was my first time to go to school. And when I was promoted to Nile Primary School, also still in Hong Kong, I joined Standard 1. I learned there for quite some time before the repatriation occurred again in 2008, around 2008 there.
Those were voices of some residents of the Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya. The International Committee of the Red Cross says its personnel were caught in crossfire on Monday while trying to evacuate wounded soldiers in Khartoum. Aliona Sienko, spokesperson for ICRC Africa, tells Nabil Biagio the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary rapid support forces have obligations to protect civilians and allow unhindered access under the Jeddah Humanitarian Declaration as well as international humanitarian law.
The situation still is very difficult, unfortunately, despite the ceasefire, because yesterday, for example, our team tried to carry out an operation to evacuate wounded soldiers. And unfortunately, despite the security guarantees that we obtained from both parties, there was some shooting that took place very close to our convoy at the moment while we were trying to cross the front line. So this just shows how difficult it is to operate in Sudan, and that it is really hugely important that the parties allow for this necessary humanitarian space for the organizations like ours and for the healthcare workers to be able to do their jobs.
As you mentioned, yesterday, Monday, on the second day of the ceasefire, there was an accident. ICRC personnel came under attack or were shot at. And you say your movement was sanctioned and agreed upon by both parties, the RSF and the army. So what went wrong? Who started this?
Well, I don't want to participate in the blame game of who started. I think what is important is that it just shows the situation that happened yesterday. It just shows that it is extremely difficult for humanitarian organizations and also for the healthcare workers, for the first responders like Sudanese Red Crescent Society to provide the emergency services to the population. And it is extremely important for the parties to respect their obligations under the international humanitarian law and provide this humanitarian space that we need, because it's just it's wrong that healthcare workers or volunteers, that they risk their own security. They put their own lives at risk to be able to do their jobs. It shouldn't be like this. We need proper security guarantees to be able to deliver these services and this assistance to the population, because the Sudanese civilians, they have been through a lot in the past 2 months, and they urgently need humanitarian assistance.
And just for clarification, ICRC was trying to evacuate wounded soldiers, SAF, soldiers with the army. Is that correct?
Yes, this is correct.
And now the ceasefire is expiring today. What is going to happen? What do you expect to happen next?
Well, the situation in Sudan has been very volatile in the past months, and it is very difficult for me to make predictions, so I'm not going to try. I would rather say what we hope to happen, and what we hope is that that there's some negotiations and agreements that are put in place that would provide some respite for the civilians.
That's Leona Sienko, spokesperson for Africa at the International Committee of the Red Cross. She spoke with Nabil Biagio from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Still on Sudan, Zimbabwe says its embassy and the house of its ambassador to Sudan were broken into in Khartoum as the fighting between the National Army and the Rapid Support Force militia continues. Colombo Sumavunga reports from Zimbabwe's capital, Harare.
The spokesman for Zimbabwe's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Livit Mugejo, says the break-in at the country's properties in Sudan is unfortunate. Mugejo, in an audio released Tuesday to a journalist group in Harare, did not say who was responsible for the incident.
I can confirm that our properties in Sudan were destroyed by some of the fighting forces in the country, taking advantage that we evacuated our people and taking advantage of the current war going on there. It's not only Zimbabwe, but most of the countries. We have reports that most of the countries' properties were also targeted. It's a sheer criminality taking advantage of the war to loot properties of our diplomats and the properties for our embassy there. So this is an unfortunate incident which is currently happening in Sudan.
Neither the embassy of Sudan in Zimbabwe nor Sudanese paramilitary rapid support forces were available for comment Tuesday about the incident. The two-month-old conflict between the RSF and the National Army has displaced more than 2 million people. At least 500,000 have fled to other countries. On Monday, donor nations pledged $1.5 billion in aid to help victims of the fighting. The advocacy manager for Norwegian Refugee Council in Sudan, Mathilde Vu, welcomes the aid, which includes refugee assistance.
However, what is important to realize is that the needs are so big, and we actually are needing $3 billion in order to actually respond to what is essentially a humanitarian catastrophe, both inside Sudan and in the regions. It is generous, but it is not enough. But we also want the international community to maintain humanitarian diplomacy.
Vu added that the pledges done at the UN conference should be accompanied by humanitarian diplomacy to ensure the affected people get help. On Monday, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres told the donor conference that 25 million people in Sudan need aid, and he fears the crisis could spill over and destabilize neighboring African states. For VOA News, I'm Kolamas Mavunga in Harare, Zimbabwe.
A And that story by Mavunga brings us to the end of this show for Tuesday. I'm your host, John Tanza, in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Joe, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.